Hi guys, what's up and welcome to a new episode of Train Smart, Move Well. I'm your host, Philip Jacobs. Today's episode is all about the job of a stuntman. And I'm very honored to have Daniel Eliasson as my guest today. Daniel's and my path crossed for the first time at the Gallo Parkour Gathering in Denmark this summer. And that got me to asking him if he wanted to be part of this podcast of Train Smart, Move Well. Daniel gives us insight into the job of a stuntman. He shares his craziest stunts, the funniest productions he's been part of, and he also tells us the story of how being lit on fire basically started his whole career. Guys, without further ado, let's get this started. Let's go. Name?
Daniel.
Living in?
Copenhagen.
Favorite color?
Pink.
Last parkour training and what did you do?
Yesterday, a lot of precision and balance work.
That sounds nice. Your favorite movie?
Pulp Fiction.
Loving it. My favorite movie too. A country you still want to travel to?
Brazil.
Daniel, your favorite tattoo and why?
I can't choose. They all mean a lot.
there's too many of them. That's fair enough. Okay. Something that fascinated or amazed you recently? It can be a crazy big thing or just a small detail.
Big waves in France.
Nice. I have to ask this question because in my Instagram stories, it keeps popping up your wonderful coffees. So your favorite way to drink coffee. Tell us about it.
A set, which is either a milk drink, so flat white or cappuccino with a filter on the side, or an espresso. Awesome. So a combination of the two.
I like that. Last but not least, Daniel, your favorite your breakfast this morning, actually. Not your favorite, but what you had this morning.
Rice cakes with peanut butter and sliced apple on top. Sounds of course, accompanied with a coffee.
Obviously, yes. Daniel, thank you and welcome to Train Smart, Move Well. It's a pleasure to have you here in the podcast. And after having bravely answered this rather stupid collection of random questions, maybe tell us in a few sentences, who are you, what are you doing, and what is happening in your life right now?
Oof, who am I? What a question. I'm Daniel. I'm 29, Icelandic, living in Copenhagen. I'm a little bit of a multitasker, so... very active guy. I train and teach parkour. Mm-hmm. Then my 9-to-5 is a running some barefoot shoe stores in Copenhagen. And then a side gig, I do stunts for film and TV. And then for free time, I try to do board sports. So surf, skate, snowboard, if I can.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't even know about that. About the stunts we are going to talk about, this is the major topic for today, but I'd really like to dive into your general sports background. I mean, what kind of brought us together or where our paths crossed for the first time was in Gallo during the parkour gathering. So yes. Obviously, I know you do a lot of parkour. Now you just shared about the other board sports. So basically, how did you grow up as a kid? Did you start with football like any German kid would do, or how was your first encounter with movement and training and sports and so on?
I think that was exactly what I did. I joined a little football club at home because there were two or three options: football, basketball, or I think swimming. There was a little judo department as well. Yeah. So I joined where all the others were, which was football, and then in the end, kind of didn't really find my place in it. Then I started running a lot because in a way that made sure that I could have more playtime. If I would run from where I was playing and home, I could squeeze a little extra minute or two before I had to be home for dinner, you know?
That's so efficient.
Very efficient. And maybe that's where kind of the tiny little spark of parkour starts. You kind of start finding the shortcuts through town, right? Mm-hmm. Then... as a young kid, I discovered this film, Yamakasi, the French parkour film. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the movie that me and a friend of mine, we would rent on every weekend and watch together and go outside and do what we called Yamakasi because we didn't have a word for it, which was essentially just jumping fences, and finding rooftops to scale and, you know, being very irresponsible little kiddos.
Awesome time.
Which then kind of develops into parkour when I finally realized that was a thing much later on in Yeah. in life.
How old were you at that time?
When I discovered parkour, but like, I think I'm 17 when I see like a flyer from somebody saying they're like, "Hey, we're gonna have a little parkour session for the next few weeks in my hometown, like an introductory course," and that kind of kicked me back into the childhood memory of being an idiot kid. I mean, like, that's kind of what I was doing there, and now I can actually train it, so I want to go and try.
That sounds awesome, yeah.
So I tried that and quickly became hooked. It didn't really catch on in the town I grew up in, so I started going to the capital city to train it with the guys there, and then started coaching about a year later as well.
And that was the coaching was still in Iceland, or was that already when you had moved to Denmark?
Oh, in Iceland still, yeah.
Okay, so
it's probably 18, 19 when I started being like an assistant coach.
Okay, cool. And that was 10 years back. So when did you approximately move to Denmark? And was that parkour related? Had that different reasons? Like how did that whole transition come about?
There's a lot of like merging things in that. I moved to Denmark 5 years ago. But I went to Gallo, the sporting school, 7 years ago, soon to be 8 years ago, long time. And that's where I kind of got to know parkour on a whole new level in a way that I really enjoyed it. Back home, it was a lot of gymnastic influences that were the places we could train. Whereas at Gallo, we could get more in touch with the harder surfaces and more, I don't know, the old school way in some way, or some others would call it the purest form, but just a different way of training parkour. And it resonated more with me than the tricking styles. During my time there, I then kind of start to develop this dream of doing stunts that had kind of also been sitting in the back of my head for a longer while for another reason, and start to see that I could do workshops and trainings in Copenhagen for it. So when I was done in the boarding school, I kept coming back to Copenhagen to do these workshops, until I then found a study, sports study in Copenhagen, which then eventually just made me move, do a full on, well, it's a 10-month academy where you do sports teaching, personal training.
Okay.
There was some parkour involved in that as well, and some outdoor sports. That was a heavier focus.
Was this the, how's it called? Paul Idrott school thing?
Paul Peterson.
Where Markus is teaching, right? Or used to teach, I don't know. Exactly.
Yes, he used to teach, yeah. Markus and a lot of these guys, yeah.
That's good stuff. Okay. And then you also mentioned before, you had this idea in your head that at some point you want to do stunts. And you said you were doing some kind of workshops. Was that already stunt type of workshops, or was it still in the parkour area? It was stunt workshops.
It was stunt specific.
Okay. So maybe we use this as a little bit of a bridge. Like, how did this whole thing start? You had the idea in your head, but somehow you needed to get there. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah. So that was via the Icelandic parkour community. So there was a German stunt coordinator that came to Iceland to do a TV show. And he had this rule that every time he went to a new country to work, he wanted to meet the local stunt crew. But in Iceland, there was no local stunt crew. So he went to the parkour gym, or the gymnastic gyms, and met with the parkour guys. And he invited us to come over to his place just outside Hamburg and come and try out some stuff. And we're 17, 18 at the time. We go for 2 summers in a row, visit him for 2 weeks at a time, and just try a bunch of stuff. And most of it was just playing around with all of the insane toys he had, which is a form of like big pillows to jump into or burning windows to jump through. And yeah, a lot of weird stuff that you would have in a huge garage as a grown man. And that kind of sets the idea that this could be something that I would enjoy doing. Also kind of growing up watching Jackass as a kid, which is maybe not the best influence, playing around with video cameras, skateboarding, being pretty good at like tumbling, falling, and messing around as a younger kid. It kind of started like intervening there and started making more sense. But then, during my stay at Gallo, I started like looking more into like, how does one become a stuntman? There's no education, there's no formal way to do it. But then I found these workshops in Denmark from a company called the European Stunt School, which sadly no longer operates. Hopefully we will see a revival of its own. But I went and joined a two-week course at the European Stunt School over a summer, where we kind of dipped into a lot of the different areas of stunts, which, like so many other disciplines, have like specialities. So we would like touch on a lot of them. And after that, I maintained contact with the guy that ran the school. And every time I visited Copenhagen afterwards, while I was trying to figure out the study thing, place to live, and all of that, I would ask him if he had like anything to do for me, if I could come and help him out, if he was on the film set or if he was doing another course. And sometimes those things would kind of overlap, so he would have me come in and just assist. I would make the coffee or pick up participants for the school. And eventually I was invited to come and assist on a music video, which I then ended up being in as well, which was
awesome.
A lot
that
of
was
fun.
Your foot in the door. Yeah.
Yes.
Which music
sure
video was it?
It was a so there's just a gig that we did. I'm pretty sure they did it for free. I at least did. It was a heavy metal band from the Faroe Islands that wanted to do a music video in a basement of a concert place here in Copenhagen. It was so absurd.
And what was your task? What did you need to do as a stuntman in your first
so,
gig there?
My initial task was to be what you call the key safety, stand with a fire extinguisher. And then a colleague of ours was to be set on fire and then to put him out. And then the director had this cool idea. It was like, hey, what about we set this guy on fire? And then he walks by that guy and puts Sam on fire. And then we put up a little fight scene between the two. So he just like spun up a whole new scene. So it was a little bit of fighting. I got set on fire. And yeah, it was pretty dope.
It's sick that this is actually happening in reality. Like, it sounds to me like, okay, this is the idea you have with a bunch of idiotic friends. You get drunk and then, hey,
oh,
how about this
way.
we should do this, and then this is exactly what it sounds like to me.
But that was also like, this was a very small thing, and that's also why I think this was a like a favor that somebody was doing for someone else, because there was a director, there was a camera guy, I think there were one or two like hair makeup artists, and then just the band and us.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you have a full-on production, right? So this was definitely like a very small thing. They had an idea. They wanted it to be like fairly violent, kind of dark. And then the directors just went nuts. And that's okay. Like they asked like, hey, is it okay with you if we undress you, set you on fire, and you do this and this and this? Like, yes. Let's do it.
Yes, please set me on fire, man. It sounds absolutely amazing.
It is wonderful. The best thing I know.
Fucking hell. Do you...
So that was the first, yeah.
Is this video, is can this be found somewhere?
Yes, this can be found. I can.
Let's make sure you send me the link and I put it into the show notes for the people to see. So they can also see you on fire, right?
Yes.
I love it. Awesome. So this was your foot in the door. So now you came there in order to, at least that's what was the intention in the beginning. You were holding the fire extinguisher to help people not be on fire anymore. All of a sudden you were on fire too. How did that then go on?
Then it continued on being, I would help out on a lot of the courses for the European Stunt School. So more of the like more specialized courses. That would be weekend courses where I do a deep dive, rather than doing like a quick touchdown like we did in the two-week courses. So I would assist on those, again, like driving participant back and forth, helping out where I could, where maybe I would have some knowledge to share, I would. But otherwise, just being a helping hand. And then instead, I got to participate as well and learn more. This way, the guy that runs this place, Jakob, he would also see what I can do. He could also get the feeling for how I work, and we work well together, which increased the chances for getting hired more for some productions.
Mm-hmm.
We did a trip down to the Czech Republic and did a workshop there, a very specialized workshop in two of the things that I at least like to say that I'm pretty good at. And I think after that, it was kind of, I was fairly integrated in that setup at least.
Yeah. When you say you got to be at more places, at more locations, and at more how do I say this properly? It's not shootings or gigs. How do you say?
Yeah, that's a fine way to put it. Like gigs, productions.
I can call it gig or production. Okay. So yeah. You got to partake in more production, and you said you learned more. What does that mean? Does that mean, okay, this is how I get to be on fire in a proper way and in a not proper way?
So like you learn all the safety aspects. That's number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. It's safety. How do we do this safely, but we make it look good? And how can we make this scene look like the director wants it to look like without anybody getting hurt? So in the various disciplines, there's of course different ways to go about it depending on what needs to be done. Is it driving? Is it wire work, which is a lot of what we do here, or fire? Is it fighting? There's a lot of different like little genres, but it's all about figuring out how to work with camera, how to work with directors, and then how to kind of set up the scene to make it believable, to make it look good, and to kind of captivate the viewer. Because what works in real life doesn't always work on camera. Figuring out that overlay.
So it's a little bit of this compromise of A, you want the director to be happy. It needs to be good looking on camera without compromising your safety. And I guess finding the best way to accomplish both of those things makes you then a good stuntman, so to speak. When you just touched upon different disciplines, you named it. You said there's fire, there's wire work, there's driving. Are there certain disciplines where you say, this is where I feel at home, this is what I'm good at, this is what I feel comfortable with, and this is a totally different regime where I'm not even the guy to talk to
if you need something? For sure. So like I know that I'm not a particularly good fighter. Mm-hmm. So that would usually depend on how good your reactions are to hits, because when you do fight scenes, you do them without contact. And I should probably train that more, because that's what's probably mostly done, I think. But I don't particularly enjoy it either. I do like the rigging, the wire work part, but that becomes very specialized very fast. So I have mostly assisted on rigging, or done some small rigging coordination jobs on my own if it's like smaller, simpler setups.
But could you also explain this for me? It's wire or rigging?
Yeah, it's we could call it both. Rigging is usually when you set up wires or lines to fly people around, pull them, push them, to make the body move in a way that's... Exactly. Then you get hooked in a wire. Do you need to go up, sideways, backwards? Does the person need to fly? What is the desired effect? And that is where this guy, my mentor, boss, Jakob, is. That's his specialty. So, of course, he gets a lot of those jobs, which pulls me into that world as well. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy it, but I'm definitely not up on the level that he is.
What about fire? When we talked about what you do at the Galu event, you said you really like the fire thing.
I do like the fire thing. There's a slightly weird thing, like I'm terrified of fire, but at the same time, that's kind of what makes it both fun and interesting. It's the respect for the element that's around, and the trust in those that help you prepare and that are around you. But it is, in a way, a fairly simple thing to do. It's just very high intensity. There's a lot of focus, not a lot of room for error. Uh-huh. But I do like it. I've done two like actual gigs where I'm set on fire for the camera. Most of the other times have been for training or when teaching at the stunt school and such. So a lot of the things we do is very often for training that then we hope to be able to use on camera at some point.
Can you, using this example, tell us how you then make that compromise of making you being on fire look good on camera without getting burned? Like, how does that work literally? Like, what do you put on your body in order not to burn your shit?
There's layers of protection depending on the scene. We have a specific gel that we use that is like a, acts like a barrier between us and the fire. It's really cold, and that helps out a little bit because we put our body temperature down then a little bit so we can actually stay in the heat for longer. Then we have garments. It's what race car drivers use, the little undergarments, the clothing they have underneath their suit. That is very, it's very fire resistant, those garments they use. So we will take this and soak in gel. Well, again, depending on the scene, sometimes you don't soak it because you don't want the wet spots to show on the clothing outside. How thick can the costume be? When we train this, we put two layers. It's all soaked. Then we put a racer suit on as well, a hoodie, denim jacket, jeans, and then you put on the gas or the accelerant, what we call it. It's depending on where you work and who you work with, everybody has kind of their own little mix of what works. And then depending on also what do you want, some kind of accelerants give a different color in the flame. And what does the, again, what does the director want? So finally, when that gets put on, there's a lot of layers between you and the fire, and it takes a while for that to reach you. And then it's all about knowing how to move if you are to move. As soon as you're moving, usually you can stay on for longer because then you can stick your face out of the flames, you can take a breath. But if you're standing still, you're usually engulfed in flames, so please don't breathe. So there's a lot of variables that will affect how long it burns and how, like, what are you using to make it burn? How big will the flames be? How bright? How dark? But yeah, and the protection, it's all about the layers. You can go very thin. I've tried that as well, but then the burn time gets shortened really fast.
So you have a
Or you
very
can go
short
really
time
thin.
frame of shooting. You have then
Yeah.
what, 10, 15 seconds,
Yes.
or what can I imagine?
It's, I think the shortest I've tried was like 8, 9 seconds. The longest was quite long. I don't really have a time for it because there was a lot of protection on there. So there's I think I can't remember. There are some records in this. My mind is a bit split about actually attempting records when doing stunts, but the longer times are quite long. But then you have some people with some tubes going for the mouth for oxygen, and people reapplying fire accelerant to keep the fire going. So there's I mean, it's usually, I would say, depending on breath and then how good was the preparation? Is there a spot that was worse covered than another that might cut it half a minute before you were done? Or if you're well covered, maybe you could actually go for half a minute more, but the scene is done. You don't need more.
Got you. Okay, but this is it sounds to me at least quite intense. Like
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
it's freaking fire, and if things go wrong, it is a problem. And other things can be a problem too. I saw a video of you on YouTube where you were jumping from, what was it, 42 feet height or so. It was very,
Oh,
very
it's
high, at least.
the highest I've jumped. That was when we did the thing in the Czech Republic.
Oh, okay, it was from there.
And that is, if you go for feet, I think it's 70, 71, but it's around the 21 meter
Okay.
down to a giant bag filled with air. But yes,
So
that's also pretty intense.
that's pretty intense, and it's really
Yes.
high. So how do you embrace that? How do you prepare for that mentally and physically? And I just have to think back, because at Gallo this summer we also had a workshop where we talked about fear with Shino. I don't know if you took that one too, which I
Not
found
sure.
really, really interesting and nice, because it was not about scaling down the challenge or the jump, but rather just looking at this shot that you want to do and think about different stuff. I don't want to talk too much about it, but it was a whole different approach towards working with your fear and then deciding whether you should or should not do it. How do you approach this? Like, you cannot prepare a gazillion times jumping when you have a 20 meter drop, or when you set on fire and the whole set is waiting for you. So how do you do
No,
that?
that's the thing. In this scenario, like, of course, this was in a training setting, so we were there for a full weekend. The highest jump I did there was on the last day, so we had used the full weekend to work ourselves up. Like, if I was called up today and asked to do a 20 meter drop tomorrow, I would probably say no. I would rather ask for 2 or 3 days to work myself up to that space again. Also, in order to make sure that I could do the fall in the way that they want it to be done. Because there are a couple of different ways of falling. And then, depending on how high it is, I'll be more or less comfortable with one or the other. But yeah, that one we did for a full week. And we start on a trampoline, figure out how to land. You learn how to land correctly. And then you go from small heights, we're talking 2, 3 meters down to a mattress. And then you gradually increase it until we start blowing up the big airbag. And then again, from like the airbag is 3 meters tall, we don't really calculate that into the full distance. That's always just from top to ground. But then we just go close, as close to it as we can, feel how it is to land in the bag contra to the mats. And then we just scale it up as we can and as our bodies allow us.
So when you have that big of a drop, and it's a scene that will probably take 2 or 3 seconds when you see the movie, it can literally take 2 or 3 days to scale up to that. And it
Yes,
needs this
easily.
preparation. Wow.
Yeah. And that's also why it's very rarely done. Like, I have never done a high fall for a scene. I think we were asked once, but then after giving them the quote for it, I think they went for CGI instead, which is probably more expensive anyway, but it is what it is.
Crazy. Okay. And do you have like a set routine mentally that you go through when you do something that is, yeah, definitely something out of your comfort zone, or where you need that scaling up process prior to actually doing it?
I mean, it's kind of hard to point at a single thing because it's very rare that we have the chance to train these things that intensively. But for me, it's all about just focusing and trying to quiet down like all the what if thoughts, which is very similar to maybe to parkour, if you would know, like breaking some jumps, which I usually find harder than the other. I don't know why. But being able to accept the fear, not trying to avoid it, and realize that it's good to be afraid of it. It keeps you in check and makes sure that you respect what you're about to do. And I remember distinctly like that fall, the 21, for me, it was more about not taking too much time. We had done it a couple of times from 15 and then we were going up for the 21. I would look at it once for a couple of seconds, go down again, take a few breaths, step up, count down, and just go. The counting down really helps there because, especially if you want to be working up for doing it for a scene, you don't have people wanting to wait for you to be ready. It is, all right, we're rolling. Action. It's go
Three,
time.
two,
Yeah,
one, go. Okay.
exactly.
You keep referencing back to that, and I think this is also interesting because I've been meaning to ask you, how does your practice and your whole experience in parkour help you to be a stuntman or even a better stuntman than if you were not to have that experience? Can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
I think it's the like two vital elements are body awareness, being able to move in a way that you know where your limbs are, you know how to rotate invert or take impacts. You've taken falls and tumbles, so like knowing that you can actually fall without getting hurt. But then the mental aspect as well. So being able to stand in front of a jump and do a calculated risk assessment, that will probably be the thing that carries over the most. Like, what is the possible outcome here? Why shouldn't I be able to do it? And if the reason for me not being able to do it is big and very severe, then it's probably a no-go. But if the reason is like if I can't find a good reason for it not to happen, then it's all about calming the mind and making it happen, and that's a whole different thing as well.
Yeah, and going for it. Did
Yeah.
you ever injure yourself on set?
No.
Never, not even
I've gotten bruises and bumps, but
yeah.
I don't really count that as an injury.
That's fair.
There's no like dislocations, no, I've never broken a bone. knock on wood. No, a couple of like, bruise and like sore body after taking a beating, but no injuries, no.
Okay, so two questions about the scenes now. What is the typical go-to scene, like a classic one that you would do being a stunt performer?
I think most of what we do is simple fight scenes, and then it's usually going out and helping the actors doing it themselves, because that's usually preferable if possible. And at least in my experience here in Denmark, would be that the productions will always prefer if we can have the actors do things safely themselves and maybe even go to such a length to like change the scene a bit so that they can do it instead of having to set up a harder scene for a stunt person. Because it usually saves time. You don't have to try and find a double, etc. So it would be go out and helping people to take a fall or to set up a little hit. A lot of my jobs have been going out and setting up secure lines with people are up in heights, close to edges, dangerous spots, or having actors fly around, explosions or whatever it is. So we would stick a wire in, pull hard, they fly out, have all the security set up on that. I think those are like the most common ones. And then I do a lot of driving. I do like that as well. That's one of my favorite things to do, and what we would call a precision driving. And rarely, it's very rare that productions allow the actors to do it due to insurance. So that's where we actually get to play a bit.
That's nice.
And very often it's very underwhelming. You get put in a car and go like, okay, you have to drive 10 meters ahead and stop, and that's it.
Really?
But the main thing is that the reason they don't put actors in it, they just have a different focus. They're acting. Where my focus is, I need to place the car in the exact same spot at the exact same angle every single time to make sure that it doesn't look weird when you change camera angles or continuity.
Oh, okay. And
So
now
that's why it's
precision
usually
driving
called
made sense
precision
now.
driving. Yeah.
Yeah. Got
So
you.
there's, you could even split it into stunt driving and precision driving. I haven't really done stunt driving, so flipping cars and getting hit by, well, I've been hit by cars, but going into like car accidents and stuff, we haven't really done those yet. Or I haven't, at least.
Interesting, but it makes so much sense that there's these two different categories, so to speak. Before I ask my second questions about scenes, you touch upon something that was also, at least for me, rather new. Because when I think of, okay, this person is a stuntman, then he does stunts in movies. But now you just talked about, hey, a big part of what I'm doing is also helping the actors perform maybe scary or risky things or whatsoever. So what I was, what I'm curious about is, I at least I assume so that there's certain actors that really like to do also the crazy things. I guess the most known example would be Tom Cruise, who just wants to do
Course.
everything. And then maybe also have actors at the other end of the spectrum. So how is your experience there? Would you agree that
It's
there's these and those, or is this like there's an average?
there's definitely actors that I really like working with because they enjoy this. Then there are some that enjoy it a little too much in a way that like it we kind of need to be the break.
Yeah, that's a delicate
Like,
situation for
yeah,
you, right?
exactly. It's like
Hey,
trying to
buddy, maybe.
gotta make sure that everybody's safe. That's the main thing. And I mean, like some, and I totally get it. Some do feel like we are the babysitters on set. Sometimes I feel like a babysitter on set as well. It's a weird way to put it, but there has to be in some cases. Then there are other actors that definitely like they have a harder time doing it than figuring out how to make them feel safe, how to showcase what they are to do in a way that makes them feel like that is something that I actually can and want to do. That is also a big part of the job, I think, to come out and go, you're going to be doing it like this, 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 and this. And then you almost even perform the stunt in front of them so they can see it almost. Just like when you, that comes back into my like teaching genes, I guess. Show a move, explain it, show it again, break it down. Make sure that the person feels like this is attainable and safe, first and foremost.
Yes, I see. I can also imagine that having been a parkour coach and, you know, having had this experience of showing people how to do things was definitely something that aided in this era.
Oh, for sure.
In this arena. I mean, you kind of touched upon it already, but how would we imagine a typical day at the movie set? Like, you know, you're booked for X, Y, Z. You probably have a couple of extra things also when the director goes crazy and wants to lit you on fire too. But are you booked for a day? Are you booked for a week, half a day? How does that work? And when you get there, how do you work?
So usually we get booked on a daily basis, depending on kind of who you are. So if we take our little segment up, we have stunt performers and coordinators. Mm-hmm. Often the coordinator will be hired for the full range of shooting. So if it's a TV series that's going on for maybe half a year, he'll be booked with him through that half year. It doesn't mean that he's going to be on every day, but the days that have something that categorizes as stunt, he's going to be there. Yeah. And then we'll get called in if there is need for assistance or for performance. So he has then found the scene, broken it down, planned it out, and then either helps the actors or gets a performer in to do it. But we, when I get hired, for example, for a day thing, usually the day before, we would get an email with something we call a call sheet, which is what scene are we filming, who's going to be in it, what is the crew, where are you going to be, when are you going to show up. So like all the necessary information, mm-hmm. Usually fairly early in the mornings. And it's a day booking, regardless of if it's a 3-hour thing or a 8-hour thing plus, we get booked on a daily basis. So we would show up on the sets. Usually there's, if it's outside, so not in a studio, then there's very often a small bus or a huge bus on set where you have the small production crew sitting inside and go in and just announce your arrival and try and find either director or the first assistant director. That's usually the one that kind of has his hands in everything. He's the guy that calls action while the director sits and looks at a screen and directs. So that's usually the right-hand man that kind of communicates everything between us and the director. If we don't talk to the director ourselves, it depends on who you're working with and how they work. And then it's maybe sometimes we arrive at 7 in the morning and then we first do something at 4 p.m., depending on how the scenes of the day evolve.
So waiting is a big part of that day, eh?
Oh, yes. There's a very common phrase in the film world, which is hurry up and wait. So you show up, you're ready, and you are ready at all times. And then finally, when it is your turn, it's now.
And you don't have those 5 seconds to finish your coffee or
something. You kind of do, but like if I have a cup of coffee in my hand and somebody calls, then it's just about, all right, I will get another one later. It's go time. Now it's to be ready. So if there are things to set up, we will always, as soon as we show up, we will set up. If we have to rig, for example, we will take our gear out, set everything up that we can if we don't disturb the film crew meanwhile. Mm. And then when it's time to go, then hopefully everything is ready. If it's not, then we can give a little time frame, preferably the smaller the time frame, the better, because everybody's always running behind schedule. That's usually
obviously
the case.
Yeah. But even, I mean, this little thing when you just described, sometimes you be there at 7 and then you only start shooting at 4. That's a lot of hours of waiting, but I would guess it's not time you can just chill and do other things, because you literally have to at least be in some kind of a mindset and physical domain to be ready to switch.
I mean,
or are you so really professional that you can just do, okay, I'm fine?
Like, I mean, it really depends on the scenes. Like, in my experience, at least the productions I've done here in Denmark, it's usually not that intense that I feel like I need to like warm up and get ready. Of course, sometimes if it is something very physical, then we kind of try and make sure that we get to know that, like, okay, it's going to be about 20 minutes. We're going to be the next scene, so we're going to start getting ready. But there have been times where I sit in a bus, read a book, look at my phone for 6 hours, or fall asleep even, We have a radio. We get ready. We know that there's lunch break here and there. And then, but when it's go time, it is go time. So you got to make sure that you're not hearing your name as a as an alarm clock on the radio. Like, oh, shit, I gotta go. No, that's not nice. So it's nice to I at least try to be around, not be in the way, just to make sure that I know what the progression is and kind of what. So I can also hear people talking about like, okay, we're gonna get ready for this scene next, and go like, okay. Then there's that scene that's probably gonna take this much time. So there's always like a little bit of adjustment, and being on toes, and you never know when they might actually go like, oh, we might want to throw in a little punch here. Let's do that, and then we
Daniel,
have to
come
kind of
over.
just like
We
get
need you
ready
right
and
here. And then also, I imagine, I mean, that's at least me being outside of this bubble. I think it would be exciting to also, see how a film is being made when you're, being on the movie set. And I mean, I also looked at your IMDb. I saw that you were a part in a couple of Netflix productions and also in a big movie with Mads Mikkelsen, who's, I mean, he's a great actor. So that's also kind of cool, isn't it?
It is it's, I think it's a pretty cool thing to work on these sets. It is it's a fun way to see what the backside of it is, and sometimes very underwhelming again, like things that look gigantic and insane on screen, and then when you kind of know the magic behind it. It becomes a little strange. Like, you know that these two scenes were filmed on the same day, but it's 2 years apart in the film, right? So there's the timelines get very skewed, and you start looking, I at least start looking at films with slightly different eyes. I like to look at them and kind of figure out how they recorded and in what order, or how things were set up, and I think that's it's a fun way to experience film as well. I've been asked if it's like ruined films for me. I think they've made them more interesting in a way. So even the more boring films, I still have something that can that I like trying to look at and nerd a bit.
Yeah, because you get this whole other perspective, the geeky perspective, so to speak, because you're curious about, okay, how did they do this? How did they combine
Exactly.
A, B, C, and so on and so forth?
Yeah.
The second question about scenes that I've been meaning to ask, what has been your craziest, scariest, or most like this did something to me adrenaline type of scene, if you look back?
So,
And later on, maybe it's the same answer, so I'm just gonna go ahead and ask it as well.
yeah.
Your most fun gig or production?
All right. I think like the crazier ones, it must be one like going on one of the bigger sets when it's been a fairly big product, like the movie Another Round, as you mentioned, Mads Mikkelsen. It was a pretty big project. It didn't feel like it at the time, but afterwards it felt fairly surreal. It won the Oscars, so like that's pretty dope. The crazier ones, I think it's always like the same one always pops in my head, so I guess I have to go with that one. It was we shot an advertisement for a online shopping company in Lebanon. So it's a shopping company that was just acquired by Amazon, and they were doing this big Black Friday advertising. And it was the most absurd universe to walk into. We got flown out, driven to a really nice hotel, which is always nice when you get to work abroad. And then we spent a full day up in a mountain range, where they were filming a bunch of like bizarre 2-3 second scenes where people in weird situations are just mentioning stuff they have on that page. And if you imagine it being like Amazon, well, they have all of it, they have everything. So they're just throwing a bunch of keywords at them. And the actors are doing a bunch of random stuff. You have a guy that looks just like Chuck Norris sitting on a metal shark screaming about things that they have while he's punching in the air.
That
And it
makes
was
sense.
random. Yeah, exactly. So it was so much happening. It was kind of chaotic, but at the same time, there was a lot of like don't know, there was a lot of things you see on the sets there that I haven't seen here at home. Like we had food trucks and coffee trucks, and we could just walk around the set, meet with other actors, talk to them, hang out. It was not like a big bus where you just sit and wait. It was like a little village that just popped up while scenes were being filmed. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I was to put on a cowboy costume, be set on fire, eat a sandwich with a cup of coffee in my hand while I say that they have tennis balls and toasters. It didn't make the ad, but I have the clip somewhere, I think, on my Instagram. So
Oh, that's good.
that third, it was fun. It was very like surreal in a way to be in a country just like we're standing on the borders of Lebanon and Syria, filming this crazy scene for a day. It was pretty insane.
Hey man, that sounds sick.
It was pretty fun. But I think the most enjoyable or fun ones have been earlier this year. I went back to Iceland to film a big Netflix project called Heart of Stone, where I was to do some driving. And that was a cool experience because it was definitely like the biggest production that I've been on. And just fun to actually be able to go home and work there in such a big project. I know there's a lot of big project filming in Iceland, and now there is a small stunt crew there as well. So I don't really work a lot at home, but it's fun when I get to. So that was pretty cool. I'm looking forward to see that one coming out. It was nothing crazy that we did. It was very simple driving on my behalf, but seeing like very high level people, like people that I worked on huge films around. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, that sounds great. That's good stuff, man. When is the series? Is it a series or a movie? The
It's
production
a
you just
movie.
mentioned? It's a
Yeah,
movie. When is it
movie
coming out?
coming straight to Netflix at some point, 23. I don't know when actually.
Okay, still a little bit of time awaiting.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We've actually gotten to a point now where I can't remember the things that are coming out and like, was I in that? Oh, I guess I was. Oh yeah, there was that scene. Oh yeah, and that thing is coming out. I completely forgot that that was a thing. So like, I know that the IMDb, for example, is definitely not fully updated
Yeah.
because I've completely lost track and now I
Okay, but
just roll with it, I guess.
where do you then how do I, where do you list for productions that are looking for somebody to set on fire? They just talk to
So,
your mentor, to Jakob, and then
yes,
or do you actually
exactly.
have like an online
Now there's
thingy?
I think that definitely varies from country to country. Where the film industry is bigger, like US or the UK, you have an extensive list of like members of. There's the British Stunt Registry, or you have the SAG-AFTRA, as it's called, the union in the States. But here in Denmark, there's not a lot of stunt performers. So it's a very small community. Everybody kind of knows everybody. The productions know the coordinators that are around. They will hire the ones they like, and those coordinators will hire the people they like, and the ones that are competent for the job. I at least hope in most cases.
That sounds good. Okay. Daniel, thank you. I have asked all the topic questions I've been meaning to ask you. Thank you, first of all, so much for giving me your time, giving our listeners our time, your time. Do you want to go ahead and go for the off-topic personal questions? Do you want to start?
Sure. I steal this one from one of my favorite podcasters, Tim Ferriss. He very often asks, if you could put any sentence up on a billboard so that the whole
Ah,
world could
this
see
one.
it, what sentence would it be?
This is fun because I have a podcast in Germany that I'm listening to, and they have the exact same question they're
Yeah,
asking. It's a good one.
it's a good one.
And the most recent answer I heard, which was, I think this week, at the beginning of this week, was, I don't know, and I'll steal that. Just because there's already so much wisdom and coaching and whatnot and perform and make yourself better and yada 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 out there, that I'm just gonna say, I don't know.
That's actually a good answer. I've been thinking about this one myself as well. Like the answer changes all the time.
What is your most
But in the
recent
end,
one?
I think the most recent one has been just relax. It'll work out. I think that's one of like a general mottos. It's a very Icelandic thing to say. That like it'll kind of sort itself. Of course, things won't sort themselves, but it's you don't have to worry as much as you do.
I like that one.
And it's
I could make use of that and remember a bit more often. Is there, how do you say that in Icelandic?
In Icelandic we say þetta
I'm not going to repeat
rættast.
that. Sounds
Ah,
great.
that's all right.
Daniel, which form of art would you like to be good at?
I would like to be good at music. I really enjoy music. I experimented with some DJing when I was younger. I don't know if I got any good at it because I never really played it for people. Otherwise, maybe at parties, but that was it. But I really do enjoy music, and I kind of wish I would have stepped into an instrument or something when I was younger. That'll be my midlife crisis. I'll get a drum set or something.
So give it 15 years from now and we'll hear you play the guitar on Insta. Awesome. Maybe I will join you because being able to play an instrument is also something I'm I wish I could do, but I just don't have a talent for music. It's horrible. So in that sense, maybe we'll take a guitar course one day in our 40s.
Maybe when that midlife crisis
We'll
hits.
let each other know. Daniel,
Yes.
thank you again for giving us your precious time, giving us insight into your life and into how it is to be a stuntman. If there's any last words from you, please take the time now, say that. Tell the people also where they can find you if you want to be found. And other than that, last words belong to you.
Well, I have very little to say. Thank you. It's this is my I don't know, popping the podcast cherry. It's a nice way to have a conversation. Nice feeling to have somebody showing interest. That's always a nice thing. Finding me, yeah, I'm on most social medias, Facebook, Instagram, under my name. Can probably link it in show notes, I guess.
I'll make sure to pop it
And
up for sure.
then everybody can feel free to reach out with questions if they want to. I'm a fairly open book.
Go ahead and shoot at this guy, guys. Okay, thank you, man. It's been a pleasure to have you on this podcast, and to our listeners, thank you for listening all the way to the end and giving us some of your precious time. I look forward to hearing you again soon, and until then, train smart and move well.